All right, so this is going to be a great episode. We're going to talk about, from my perspective, what is counseling and what is coaching, and help you, the listener, understand the role and need for both. And I truly believe that one is not superior to the other, and that we need both, and that both professionals in counseling, therapy, social work, whatever we want to call it, and the professionals in life coaching can coexist. There's more than enough work to be done, and that if we would just understand what we do and what our roles are, we would learn to cooperate, work together, and just function in this world more efficiently, knowing that neither one of us are going away. So if you've ever wondered for yourself what the difference between counseling versus coaching is, I made this episode for you. Hopefully I can give you some insight. Hopefully I can answer some of those questions and ultimately help you make a decision for yourself when you might need counseling versus when you might benefit from coaching. So let's buckle in for a ride with just you and me. Hello, thanks for tuning into the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the upgraded life. All right. So I like to start with definitions. So let me bring you first a definition for counseling. And this comes from the ACA, the American Counseling Association. And what they put out there as a definition for counseling goes as follows. Professional counseling is a professional relationship that empowers diverse individuals, families, and groups to accomplish mental health, wellness education, and career goals. That is what the ACA has submitted as a definition for counseling. And we'll spend some time unpacking that sentence. There's a lot of things in there that we really need to dig into so that we can understand it, because that definition alone is pretty broad. It's pretty ambiguous. And I don't think it actually describes what the typical counselor or what the typical consumer of counseling is actually doing. And we'll talk more about that later. But let's now go to a definition of life coaching. This definition of coaching is going to come from the International Coaching Federation, ICF. And they are the leading global coaching organization and professional association for coaches. And they define coaching as partnering with clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. Now, as you have just experienced, both of those definitions are pretty broad. They're somewhat vague. They definitely leave a ton open for interpretation. And there's a little bit of overlap, but there's not total overlap. So with those two definitions established, we'll be able to dig into both ways of working people, and with the goal of helping you make an informed decision of when you might need a counselor and or maybe when coaching is going to be the best option for you. So let's go back to that definition of professional counseling and let's dig into it. Okay, so the first part of the definition of professional counseling is that it's a professional relationship. So what does that mean? Well, what that means is professionals get paid for what they do, and in exchange, they're expected to conduct themselves as professionals. That's why in most any master's program and in PhD programs that are linked to working with people, counseling, therapy, social work, there's going to be a specific class that talks all about the ins and outs of being a professional in the field. It's actually an entire class. So what that really means to you, the end consumer of counseling, is that you can expect your counselor, your professional counselor, to be trained, to be ethical, to behave according to a set of ethical guidelines that's usually determined by their professional association. If you're a counselor, in my case, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, so I might ascribe to the AAMFT, the American Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. They have their own code of ethics. And then on top of that, you'll be expected to not only abide by your laws according to your state and federal laws, but each state will also have a code of ethics that a professional counselor will have to abide by. And to sum up those ethics, it really comes down to making sure that the consumer of the service, the consumer of counseling, has things like their information is private, that the counselor won't do things to take advantage of them in any sense of the word. Most of your ethical violations come down to a counselor doing things or acting in ways to tilt the relationship in their favor as the professional and out of the favor of the person receiving the services. And there's a lot of ways that can happen. Most of the time, the things that get people in trouble is sexually and financially, when the relationship gets tilted into the favor of the service provider around those two things. That's automatically going to be a no-no, and that's where most of the trouble comes in terms of professional counselors not acting professionally and not acting according to their ethics. So that first part of the definition, professional counseling as a professional relationship, that's really what that's talking about. Now, there's a bunch of other things like maintaining client confidentiality, which is huge, and making sure that you know how to maintain your files so that your information is as secure as possible. If you're using electronic medical records, which most people are these days, there's all these things that you have to do to make sure that your client information is secure. That all comes into play of being a professional. All right, so the next phrase in that definition is professional counseling is a professional relationship. Here's the next phrase: that empowers diverse individuals, families, and groups. So we'll stop there and dissect that a little bit. So empowers. Well, in professional counseling, one of the first tenets in the ethics is to support client autonomy. So when you are empowering a client, but then also abiding by the first point of ethics, which is to support client autonomy, you are limited to the extent that you can empower that person, that family, or that group, meaning that you cannot put anything in front of them. You cannot push them to consider things that aren't part of what they want for themselves in the first place. Now, that may seem like a no-brainer, but I'm going to tell you, coaches do this very differently. But this is talking about counseling, so we'll save that part about coaches for a little bit later on here in this episode. But you can't, there's limits to how you can empower somebody and also support their autonomy. So, Mr. and Mrs. Counselor, I hear you saying that, but I really want to go this way. Well, a counselor then is stuck. They cannot say, well, you really shouldn't think of it this way. You really shouldn't go after it this way. You really need to see it from my perspective. No, 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 no. That is a violation of the first tenet of ethics in counseling, which is to support client autonomy. Even if that thing from that counselor's experience, that a counselor's training or know-how is really going to say, yeah, this is really the best direction for you. If the client isn't interested, if the client doesn't want it, you have no business to put it in front of them. Now, you can mention it once, right? You can run it by them. You may even check in on it later, but you've got no business insisting upon it. You got no business crafting goals around it, because that is not empowering clients. That is asserting your will and your autonomy over the clients. When I was teaching graduate school, I would make sure that their treatment plans and their goals ultimately supported client autonomy. I would pound this with some pretty good intensity to make sure that people understand what their role is as a counselor. Now, I guarantee you, I know for a fact that not everybody ascribes to this, that not everybody understands what empowering in the face of client autonomy actually looks like, because I've never seen it be part of a syllabus in a course description. I really haven't. Now, we give homage to it, but we don't really break it down practically into what that actually looks like. So empowers diverse individuals, families, and groups. I think what this is really talking about when they put this phrase in there is to describe that professional counselors can work with people's families and groups. I really would think that that's what the intention there is. We like these words like empower, so we throw these things in there, just like safety. I'm not a big fan of using the word safe in terms of the work that we do as counselors, but again, that's a whole nother soapbox that we'll maybe save for another episode. But counselors work with individuals, families, and groups. The next part of this definition, the next phrase here, is to accomplish mental health, wellness, education, and career goals. Wow, that's a mouthful. So let's break that down one step at a time. To accomplish mental health goals. Now, I tell you, most people don't walk into a counseling relationship with mental health goals, because most people aren't educated about mental health. Most people don't even know what we as clinicians describe as mental health, because that's a huge part of what we do, right? Is that we educate them about disorders and criteria and symptoms and interventions and strategies. So most people don't walk into a counseling relationship with mental health goals. Now, there are some. If you're working with people who are actually therapists, then they may have mental health goals. A lot of people, because of the way the internet is and whatnot, you can actually do your own research. You can self-diagnose, and you may walk in with specific mental health goals. But by and large, most people don't have an understanding of, number one, of mental health is. So if they don't understand mental health, then they're not going to have mental health goals. That's a huge part of what counseling is going to bring to them, is to break down what their experience is as discrete symptoms that, when we put them together in a menu, it's a menu style of diagnosis that we have a disorder, that then we have some prescribed interventions and strategies that we can use to help alleviate yourself from those symptoms. Okay, so that's basically how counseling works. Mental health, and it also says then accomplish wellness. There's a comma. It says mental health, comma, wellness, comma, education, comma, and career goals. So you're going to empower individuals to accomplish wellness. Now, I can tell you for a fact that the first time that I ever got introduced formally, well, I guess it's not true. At bachelor's level, when I was a psychology major, we did get exposed to health psychology. That's a field, that's a discipline, and I really enjoyed learning about that, health psychology. But in master's level, we don't really talk about wellness. We don't talk about wellness as treatment goals. We don't talk about wellness as a need for coming into a counseling relationship. We don't do a very good job of that at all. And again, I say that not from a one person thinking about it. I'm saying it as a person who learned the KCREP competencies that were established for. These are the learning outcomes that any master's level clinician needs to know. And I can tell you, wellness isn't a big part of that at all. It wasn't really until my PhD training that one of my courses in career actually kind of folded into wellness and really talked about what a shame it is that we focus so much on mental illness and we don't focus enough on mental wellness. And it's kind of interesting because there's several pioneers in the field of counseling and psychology that really rejected the direction that the disciplines were going and specifically focused on mental wellness as the model. And in today's empiricism, empirically based kind of worship, those methods and those modes of counseling and psychology really kind of get downplayed because of the quote-unquote lack of evidence, the lack of empiricism. And again, that's a whole other episode that we could go on to, and I'm trying to stick to the topic here, which is counseling versus coaching. So I don't even know what to say about wellness. And so somebody coming into counseling or therapy wanting to experience mental wellness or relational wellness, we don't really talk about that. We don't have symptoms. We don't have symptoms that says such and such person suffers from a lack of wellness in these areas. That's not the way that it's structured at all. So it's interesting that that is in there. And I get it, because what I'm trying to paint a picture is that the way that the vast majority of counseling, social work, marriage and family therapy is, you know, it's really beholden to insurance panels and being able to use a client's insurance benefit to pay for the service. That's the way the vast majority of the system works. And I guarantee you, you're not going to be able to present for a need in mental wellness and have your counselor or therapist diagnose you as such, and then be able to have your insurance provider reimburse you for seeking mental wellness. It's just not going to happen. All right, moving on to education. Okay, same thing. These last three things, wellness, education, and career goals, just repeat what I already said. Now, clinicians may be trained in these areas, right? But you're not going to be able to use your insurance benefit in order to pay for these three things. Now, there are a lot of your universities and your community colleges, they'll have career programs that you as a standard citizen can go to, and oftentimes they're given to you for free. So there's a lot of things that you can do with vocation and career that you can get professional help with for free, but you're going to be hard pressed to go to a mental health clinic, a community mental health center, or a private practice clinician and be able to seek services for education and career goals, because so much of us just get trained that you have to diagnose according to the DSM, and you're not going to find reimbursable diagnoses for education and career goals within the DSM that the insurance panel is going to accept and reimburse for. It's just virtually unheard of. So that definition from the ACA, again, I'm going to give it to you from beginning to end. Professional counseling is a professional relationship that empowers diverse individuals, families, and groups to accomplish mental health, wellness, education, and career goals. Now, it is true that a professional counselor gets trained in all those areas. However, the way that the work gets employed, the way that the services are delivered, is so much influenced by the DSM-5, the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders, version 5, and virtually controlled by the insurance panels. That even though these are things that a professional counselor are trained in terms of understanding and intervening with, you will not be able to seek help by the vast majority of ways using your insurance benefit to get help in those areas. It just won't happen. Your insurance panel will deny those claims all day long. There's basically only four things that you can really seek services for in terms of mental health. Either you're depressed, you have anxiety, you have some kind of trauma, PTSD, maybe bipolar and schizophrenia. Maybe there's five things, right? But people that, and this will vary from region to region and area to area, depending on where you're practicing. But you will learn that if you basically, that your insurance panel that drives most of the people that are coming to seek you for services, your insurance panel only really gives the nod to four or five diagnoses. So you just learn to operate within that. And you learn to kind of fudge the symptoms, as to speak, to make sure they fit the specific diagnosis in order so that you can get paid, which I think is an ethical travesty. All right, so that should have whetted your appetite a little bit for counseling. So now switch to life coaching. Let's get back over to that definition. All right, so as a reminder, the ICF defines coaching as partnering with clients in a thought-provoking and creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. So sort of same outset, you're partnering with clients. Who has clients? Well, professionals have clients. In the coaching world, you're still going to have to maintain confidentiality with your clients, just like you would as a counselor. Now, the criticism against coaching is that it's unregulated. Yes, that's true, but results speak for themselves. If you're a coach that's out there blabbing about your clients, well, you've just basically shot a big old hole in your boat of coaching, and it's going to sink and nobody's going to refer anybody to you. Okay. The same thing happens in the counseling world. When I used to teach counselors, I would say counselors are like car mechanics, meaning that in your town, in your locale, there's lots of options to fix your car, and everybody knows the mechanic that you would send everybody to, and everybody knows that mechanic that you would absolutely not even send your worst enemy to because of how terrible they are in terms of what they do in their customer service. Counselors are in the same boat, and I would also say coaches are in the same boat. So while it's true that coaching is quote unquote unregulated, results speak for themselves. And if you provide poor customer service, if you're not professional in the way that you conduct yourself, your business is going to sink. And that's true for counselors as it is for coaches. For counselors, you may be up against civil penalties that your regulating board can enact against you, where a coach, such a thing isn't necessarily in play. You're always at risk of lawsuit, no matter who you are and what service you're providing. So there may be recourse that you could take if you have a particularly botched experience with a life coach as well. But it is true that by and large, the life coaching industry is unregulated. So partnering with clients in thought-provoking and creative process. All right, so let's think about that. Thought-provoking. Yeah, so I would say that coaches spend a lot of time learning and understanding how clients think about themselves, their current issues in front of them, and whatever it is that their goals are in front of them. That you have to understand the thinking behind your client and the way that they look at their life in front of them in order to be able to help them. So thought-provoking, I think, is a good descriptor. It's just the tip of the iceberg. What does that actually mean? Well, that's going to mean a lot of different things depending on who you are as a coach and the type of person that you're working with. Creative process, absolutely. You've got to be creative in how you approach that particular client and their particular needs and their particular goals. Although a coach may have a quote-unquote program that they offer people, you're going to have to be ready as a coach to adjust and augment that program to meet the specific needs of your client. And that's what makes a coach good at what they do, is being able to really understand the head and heart of their client in order to help them to collaborate with them in a creative process to bring about the results that they want. Head and Heart is an homage to Bradley Grinnan, the coach launcher. You can find him on Facebook. He's somebody that I have personally invested in to help me in my journey to become a coach. And I highly recommend him if you are thinking about coming down a similar journey that I was. All right. And the creative process that inspires them to maximize their personal and professional potential. All right, inspires them to maximize. And this is where I think coaching is categorically different than counseling. I'm going to save my metaphor for a little bit later here, but inspires them to maximize. You know, oftentimes a coach, because of their own personal experience, this is where coaches get discounted when they shouldn't be, is that if coach is in the work for the right reason, then they have done something tremendous in their own life, and they've helped other people, whether they've been paid for it or not, do something tremendous in their lives. And that's really kind of the impetus for a coach. Now, there's all kinds of ways to get certified to be a coach. I'm not going to go into that here. But what I can say is that a true belief that people walking this earth by and large are not being inspired and they're not being helped to maximize themselves, and having a belief that you as a coach can do that for other people because you've been able to do it for yourself, probably as a result of your own coaching or your own mentoring, that's really all that's needed in order to be an effective coach. I can't say the same thing for a counselor. I know inside shop talk amongst counselors is counselors bemoan all the money that they've paid for very little compensation that they get in return for the work that they do, meaning they spent all this money to be trained, but here's really what the service is paying for. They talk bad about their clients. They talk about how it's there's no hope for certain clients. There's just a lot of scarcity mindset presence within counselors, and I think that that's a shame. And as a coach, you should be a fully adopted into the abundance mindset versus the scarcity mindset. And I think that alone, having anybody, whether it's a counselor or coach, being of the abundance mindset is going to be a huge factor in you as a service recipient being successful in whatever it is that you're trying to do in your life. That's huge. Scarcity versus abundance mindset. Make sure your counselor has an abundance mindset. Make sure your coach has an abundance mindset. I'm going to say that the vast majority of coaches have an abundance mindset. I'm going to say maybe 25% of your counselors have an abundance mindset. That may not be fair because I haven't polled them. I haven't done a study on it. But that's just my experience having interacted with professional counselors for, again, almost 20 years. So inspires them to maximize. When you contract with your coach and you have the kind of the upfront initial goals, your coach is going to hold you accountable to those goals. Your coach is going to hold you accountable to even things beyond those goals because they see what you're actually capable of, and they're going to push you to maximize your personal and professional potential. And that's kind of in contrast to what I was talking about earlier about counselors with supporting client autonomy. Well, coach, I really don't want to do XYZ. Well, as a coach, you can say, I don't really care what you want. This is what I see for you. And it's my job as a coach to help you maximize your personal and professional potential. So I'm not going to let you go one more day giving yourself that same excuse. From now on, it's this. You just can't do that as a counselor. You just can't. I know counselors that say that they do. I know counselors that absolutely do those things. And I'm going to say you're running an ethical risk there. You could be held accountable for running a rough across the client's autonomy. Check out your own ethics. It's there. All right. So the last little phrase there in the coaching definition from the ICF talks about maximize their personal and professional potential. And that really aligns with one of my taglines in the work that I do with The Upgraded Life, because I talk about helping people realize and reach their potential. So very similar to maximize their personal and professional potential. And it's my belief, it's my experience in the work that I've done with people is that too many people walk around this earth, number one, not really realizing who they are and what they were meant to be and how to envision themselves as that person. So if they don't realize it, then they can't reach it. So the first part of the process is to realize your potential, and then it's to develop a plan, implement strategies to reach your potential. So very much in tune with this idea of maximize their personal and professional potential. So I see that as a coach bringing to the coaching experience things that are absolutely designed to grow and stretch and push your client into areas that they never thought possible. Maybe the areas that they never entertained as something that would be part of their lives. Again, this is where it's categorically different than counseling. And so, yeah, I think that that is a decent breakdown of the definitions that drive both professional counseling and professional life coaching. So the next thing I want to do is kind of use a metaphor that I have grown fond of. I don't think it's a perfect metaphor, and I may dump it for something different in the future, but for now it works. And when I use it with folks, either in the counseling world or in the coaching world or clients that are seeing or considering one or the other, it seems to make sense to them. So I'm going to run with it for now. But like I said, I don't think it's perfect, and I may choose something different in the future, but here it goes. So if you're listening to this, you are listening to this because it's a podcast. So I want you to picture in your mind a pretty big piece of blank white paper. And as you picture that in your mind, I want you to draw a line through it. So make sure you're in landscape mode, not in portrait mode. So picture that paper in landscape mode. It's a pretty large piece of paper. And then draw a line from it that would be the horizontal axis. So left to right or right to left doesn't really matter to me. But draw a big line there. Okay, and then what I want you to do is to imagine a squiggly line that goes above that center line, that horizontal line, and then goes below it. Kind of a squiggly line that goes through that horizontal line that you've put down your paper. Okay, so what that represents is normal. What that represents is average. What that represents is typical. So the normal, the average, the typical person, they're going to function, quote unquote, okay or fine. The squiggly wave line above it might represent a time when they're really feeling good about themselves and in life. Maybe they, you know, did something particularly well at work or within relationships. Maybe their kids got into college, whatever it is, right? So they will experience an uptick above that normal average line down the center of the paper. And then the opposite can happen. They can lose a job. They can lose a promotion. A child can be denied access into a college, whatever it is. They get in a car wreck, and then their kind of life experience dips down a little bit. Right? And life comes with these upticks and downswings, but they, you know, by and large, don't throw us into a status of needing professional help, but sometimes they can. Right? Sometimes one little thing can really throw us off kilter, and then we're operating far below that average line. Imagine a very big downswing that's creating you to operate below what's normal, typical, or average. Okay. And that's where I see professional counseling, your standard mental health counseling, coming into play. So when your life is pressing on you in such a way that you aren't able to keep up with the demands that the life that you have in front of you is asking you to keep up with, that's going to call on a need for professional help in terms of counseling, mental health counseling, licensed clinical social work, licensed marriage and family therapy. And really, it's the goal there to assess your symptoms, come up with a diagnosis, develop a treatment plan to get you back to your already established normal, your already established typical, right? You're already established, this is what I'm like on an average day. Because when those symptoms are no longer there, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's trauma, when those symptoms aren't there, then you're able to function just like you normally would have, right? So I see professional counseling, social work, marriage and family therapy as a vehicle to get you back to what we would call baseline. So that middle line that you drew down the landscape paper that I had you vision, that's baseline. And counseling and therapy and mental health counseling, that's all about getting you back to baseline. It's about alleviating the symptoms just enough so that you can get back to what was normal for you. Hopefully that makes sense. Now, coaching, on the other hand, is about taking that middle line that you drew, and let's say that on the vertical axis, it's on the zero, right? So let's call that middle line that you drew across that landscape paper at the zero mark on the vertical axis. And coaching is going to help you to move that middle line, that horizontal axis, up a few notches. It's going to move from the zero to a one, to a two, to a three, wherever it needs to be in order for you to bring about the things in your life that you currently aren't experiencing. So it's about doing things in your life with repetition, with consistency, with a plan to bring about things that you've never experienced before. Okay, so it's bringing about possibilities that you think might be true, but you don't know how to get there. And then a good coach is going to help you experience things that you never thought possible at all. They weren't even in your frame of reference when you started out. So again, counseling is going to get you back to what you already knew to be true and what you already knew to be normal, right? But you lost your way somehow and symptoms crept in and disorders crept in. And sure, you may be trapped into a mindset of, I don't think I can ever get back there again. But, you know, again, you're ultimately fighting to get back to what you knew to be normal, versus coaching is helping you create a new normal. Another fundamental difference between counseling and coaching, obviously, is the fee structure that's associated with it. Now, having worked within the professional counseling world for as long as I have, I know that world very well. I also know the coaching world very well. Counseling as an intervention only requires the client to invest in themselves one session at a time. And if you're billing insurance, then you're really only investing one copay at a time. So let's say, for round number's sake, that the counselor's fee is $100 for a 50-minute hour. That's fairly typical. Might be a little bit less, might be a little bit more, but for round number's sake, let's say that's what it is. And let's say your copay is 20%. So that means when you show up to that counselor, you're going to have to provide them in the moment $20. And so what you are saying is, I am invested in getting back to baseline into this life that I once knew. I'm invested $20 worth. And I'll have to brush up on the most recent statistics on this, but I think something on the order of counseling is only effective like 40% of the time. So you take out all, you know, the reasons why people go into professional counseling, and when they survey people, say, hey, did you actually receive benefit from this? Did you actually reach their goals? And about 40% of people will say, yes, I did. So what about the other 60%? What was going on with them? And I know one of the things at play there is when you're only investing $20 at a session in order to get yourself back to baseline, you're just not in it. You're not in it for the right reasons. And I used to teach folks that when I was in graduate school as an adjunct instructor that, you know, on average, you've got 8 to 12 sessions with somebody. Okay, so let's say on the higher end of that, you've got 12 sessions at $20. So that's $240. Now, for some people, $240 or cost 12 weeks is going to be a tremendous amount of money. And for other people, it's a drop in the bucket. And you have to kind of judge that based on the person that you're working with. But I can guarantee you that the more that you're invested in a process, like counseling, the more benefit you're going to receive from it. And right or wrong, the amount of money that you're actually sacrificing for this process is one of the biggest indicators of how invested you are in the process. There's just really no way getting around that. And the same is true for counselors, right? Counselors are required to have a sliding fee, which means, and even within ethics, it's pointed out that counselors are actually expected to provide a certain amount of their services for free, pro bono. And counselors kind of resent that. And, you know, it's almost kind of unspoken rule that the clients that you take on pro bono or for a greatly reduced fee tend to be the most difficult clients to work with because, again, they're not really invested in the process. They're not invested in getting back to baseline. Like somebody who maybe who doesn't have insurance and they're paying out of pocket, they're much more invested in the process. And you see this in a lot of ways. Follow through with homework. right? That the more invested you are, the more follow through you're going to have with in between session expectations is a fancy way of talking about that. And to a certain degree, this has been researched within the counseling world. And I think that there were studies about, you know, services being offered for free versus services that were offered in exchange for, you know, like a donation to a food bank versus, you know, $5, $20, $100. And even a $5 service for fee brought about much better outcomes than services that were offered pro bono. Side note, same thing. This isn't just true in counseling. It's also true in other ways that people can be helped. I used to coach Little League, and one of the dads on my team helped coach and supported the team financially. He was an orthodontist, or is an orthodontist still in my town. And he used to give out free orthodontia work for kids that were, you know, low income and parents couldn't afford it. And he would say, by and large, they were some of the most difficult families and patients to work with because they just wouldn't follow through. They wouldn't come back to get the adjustments that were necessary. They wouldn't take care of their teeth as prescribed. When you have braces and other forms of orthodontia work, and it actually made, you know, if you're not taking care of things and you're not keeping your visits, then it actually can make things worse than what you started out for. So this isn't something that's just relegated to the counseling profession, that the more that you're invested in the process, and I know that there's a lot of other things that can get in the way of your investment. It's not purely about money. It's about all the other things that are happening in your life that can get in the way. So I don't want to deny that. But I am trying to paint the picture that when the typical person who is seeking counseling to get themselves back to baseline is only invested $20 at a time, chances are they're not going to get a ton out of that process. I also want to say that there are counselors in all kinds of settings that do incredible work with people, no matter what their level of investment monetarily. So, I started out this episode saying that there's room for both counselors and coaches, and I absolutely agree with that. And so I don't want to take away from the people that derive high satisfaction from the work, no matter who they're working with, whether it's community mental health or private practice, and they are able to get tremendous results with their clients, no matter what the level of monetary investment, because that does happen. I don't want to take away from people that are really, really good at what they do as a counselor. So switching over to coaching, the fee by and large represents a couple different things, but at its core, it represents the degree to which the client is going to be invested in the process. It also represents, at least it does for me, in the way that I've learned to approach my fee for coaching, is coaching in my fee needs to make sense in three ways. It needs to make sense based on what I believe my time is worth. It needs to make sense based on the time that it's going to be taken away from my family in order to be present as a coach for this client. And it also needs to make sense based on how much time this client is going to need for me on a weekly, monthly basis in order to get the goals that they have initially expressed that they want or need. So for me personally as a coach, those three things are definitely factored into my fee as a coach. So coaches usually pay or charge by a package, and we usually want to get paid all up front. And that's to ensure that the client is invested in the process. You know, my coach, one of the people that I've hired for me, and I've hired several coaches to help me in the last couple of years get the results that I need in my life. But one of my coaches, again, I've already talked about him, Brad LeGuerin, and talks about the fee needs to be high enough so that the client won't hide, right? So at $20, a client can absolutely hide, and they can dismiss what you have to say what you're putting in front of them. They can make all kinds of excuses because in the end, they've only invested $20, right? Coaching to the tune of $100, $200, $300, a client can hide from that for the most part. And again, I don't want to dismiss people that couldn't imagine, you know, sacrificing, you know, $300 for coaching. But, you know, the fee needs to be enough that it is representative of the coach's experience, the coach's a proven ability to bring about results, and it also needs to be enough to keep the client engaged in the process and to keep them from hiding. So what does a coach do then? You know, counselors, again, like we talked about, they're going to assess you for symptoms. They're going to derive at a diagnosis. Hopefully they're sharing that diagnosis with you. And then they're coming up with a treatment plan that makes sense to you. And then you set out weekly to engage in that treatment plan, to carry out the things both in session and outside of session in order to alleviate your symptoms and bring you back to baseline. In a nutshell, that's what a counselor does. So what does a coach do? Well, a coach does some of the same things, right? It is identifying what are your goals, what are your current barriers to your goals as you currently understand them, and then it's coming up with a plan that when executed, you can't help but achieve your goals, okay? So most people come into coaching with goals, but they really aren't the goals that are they end up with. Most people come into counseling with some ideas of what's holding them back, but it's through the coaching process that they understand that those barriers are oftentimes the tip of the iceberg, that there's often much deeper seated things, mindset issues in my experience, that hold people back from actually taking action and doing what they need to reach their goals. And that's what's going to make a quality coach stand out, is that they're going to be able to really kind of point you to what your goals actually are. And they're going to point you to the things that are actually holding back and not let you kind of operate with your initial understanding of those two things. And then from there, once you have that established, then a coach is going to help you figure out how to do things on a daily basis, your daily method of operation, that when you execute these things on a daily basis, you can't help but reach the goal, right? So if you're working with a coach and weeks go by and you're not really seeing much progress, well, your coach should be checking in with you, and you should be bringing that to your coach, and you should be analyzing, okay, what were our goals and what are our barriers and what's our daily method of operation. And there's going to be some need to tweak something in one, two, or all three of those areas, right? Because if your goals really are your goals and your barriers really are identified well, and then your DMO, your daily method operation, should be well on target, right? So if you're not making progress, it's an issue in one of those three things. A coach is going to hold you accountable for things, right? If you say, this is my goal, and then 2 days later you're saying, oh, it's so hard, and a coach is going to ask you, and they're like, look, this is what your goals are. Did you think it was going to be easy? And if you say, no, I didn't think it was going to be easy, then your coach is going to say, well, get to work, right? If you say, yes, but I didn't think it was going to be this hard, and the coach is going to say, well, I'm sorry, I should have told you that a little better on the front end. Yes, it's going to be this hard, and it's going to even be harder, and it's my job to see you through these hard points, because isn't it worth for you to take your, again, horizontal line that was at a zero and notch it up to 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 and beyond, so that you can get the results that you want and even more? That's really the job of a coach. Again, I really see that as fundamentally different than what the job of a counselor is. A counselor is more about helping you process your experience. Coach is about helping you create a whole new experience. So how do you know if coaching is for you versus how do you know if counseling is for you? So if you look at your life, you look at yourself, and you look at the things that you've achieved, you look at the legacy that you are leaving, and when that's compared to what is considered typical, average, standard, okay, quote-unquote fine if you can say yes to those things, well, then counseling is probably not for you. Okay. If your life is full of terrible sleep, you're full of anxiety, your personal relationships are suffering because of trauma, well, then counseling probably is for you, right? And your goal is to get back to functioning as normal, being able to be the parent that you need to be, being able to be the employee that you need to be, being able to be the partner that you need to be. Those are all things about getting you back to baseline, getting you back to functioning as expected, given your age and stage in life, right? But let's say you're an employee, you've been an awesome employee, you've been an employee of the year, you frequently get good performance appraisals, but you want to start a business, right? That you know that there's something more for you. Well, coaching is probably for you then, right? Let's say that your health measures, your BMI, your blood work, your blood pressure, all those things, you know, check out within okay limits for the average, but maybe you want to do a triathlon. Maybe you want to be do an Ironman. Well, coaching is probably for you. You're going to be hard pressed going into a counselor and getting to use your insurance to bill for something like, you know, I'm okay health wise, but I really want to run an Ironman. Can you help me, counselor? Well, yeah, your counselor can help you. They probably can, but they're not going to be able to bill insurance for that. And I can 100% honestly tell you that they're not going to be trained to help you in those areas of wellness, because we only give homage to that in our courses at the master's level. We do not go into it. We don't really talk about what expansive mental wellness is all about. We just don't. So coaching is an investment in yourself. Coaching can be expensive. And I'm going to quote the wise Warren Buffett and tell you that the only investment that's guaranteed to pay off every single time is that investment that you make in yourself. And coaching is an investment in yourself. By definition, coaching is about helping you create a new normal, and coaching expects you to pay for that by and large upfront. So that way you won't hide, and that way you will execute the process. I also learned from Bradley Grinnan. This is also borne out in the book Peak and I think Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell, that the typical person will only carry out 60% of what's expected of them. And that's across the board. So that's a play at coaching. That's a play at counseling, that when you look at your standard typical consumer of counseling or coaching, the standard person is only going to carry out 60% of their expectations. That's just human nature, right? And a coach is going to call you out on that. A counselor is going to ask you how you feel about that. A coach is going to drive you to go from 60% to 100%, to not let excuses be there as the reasons why this program didn't work or this coaching didn't work. That if you aren't carrying it out as described, you know, as planned, you know, as prescribed to 100%, well, that's you. And your coach is going to hold you accountable for that. I've had several coaches in my life that I've hired. I've hired coaches for my own fitness. I've hired coaches for my own coaching. I've hired coaches to help me with the way that I brand and market myself in website copy. So I'm not coming to you as somebody who hasn't highly invested in myself in the realm of coaching. I've been to personal development seminars. I highly recommend the First Steps to Success and Creating a Dynasty that's offered by Danny Johnson. Those were very instrumental in me getting to where I'm at today in terms of all the things that I'm doing as a coach and as a podcast producer. So I'm not coming to you as somebody who hasn't invested in my own coaching. If I didn't believe in its power for myself, then I wouldn't be out here talking to you about it as well. In the times that I spent with Danny Johnson, those are both 3-day seminars, First Steps to Success and Creating a Dynasty. I got more work done on a personal level in those 3 days than I ever did in any of the counseling that I had to go through, whether it was by personal choice or by nature of being at a master's level or a doctorate level when they required you to engage in your own process in terms of counseling. All right, so it is almost at an hour, about 54 minutes, if I have this right. And what I've tried to do is laid out, and I think I've done a good job, is the difference between counseling and coaching. Again, I'm trained as a counselor. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of Oregon. I've been active in that capacity for at least 18 years. I've been officially calling myself a life coach since 2018, so the better part of 2 years. And for me, working with people as a coach is way more rewarding. I work better with people in that realm and that dynamic. That doesn't mean I wasn't good as a counselor, because I was, and I have a track record to prove that. But for me, it's just much more rewarding to work as a coach. So I know both worlds very well. I hope this was informational for you. I know that if you're a counselor listening to this, you probably got your feathers ruffled a little bit. That's okay. Let me know if that's the case, and I'd be happy to continue this conversation. But I also want to, again, come back to this idea that there's more than enough work out there for both counselors and coaches. We just need to understand what we do in these different disciplines and how to coordinate better with each other and adopt the abundance mindset, let go of the scarcity mindset, because people are looking for help. And not everybody can be helped by a counselor, just like not everybody can be helped by a coach. And in this pursuit of realizing and reaching our personal potential, we need both counselors and coaches at play, doing what they do at a high level, and so that people can benefit from those services. Now, one of the things that I do as a coach, many coaches do this, is I offer a free strategy session for folks. It's 30 minutes of my time that I'll give you complimentary, and it'll involve either a Zoom call or a phone call, and I'll just listen to what it is that you're up against. I'll listen to your story. I'll listen to what you say your goals are and what you think your obstacles and barriers are. And if I think I'm a good fit for what you're wanting to get from coaching, then I'll let you know that during the call. I may even tell you what a package might look like for you. And if not, then I'll connect with you via email, and I'll lay it all out for you in a way that you can either say, yes, Nick, I want to work with you, or no, Nick, I don't really think this is the right thing for me at this point in time. And that's okay by me. If I'm not a good fit for you, then I will find somebody who is, because of my network. I know lots of different coaches that do lots of different things for people, and I'm happy to connect you with somebody who's a better fit. Thank you once again for taking an hour out of your day, investing in yourself by listening to this podcast. If you got something from this specific episode, learning the differences between counselor and coach, then let me know. Go over to Apple Podcasts, leave me a 5-star review, type something specifically about how this episode really helped you understand the difference between counseling and coaching. I'd love to see that kind of feedback come through. As always, go over to my website, www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast. You'll be able to catch this episode there. All the show notes, all of my other episodes are there. And that's really the best place to kind of stay in touch with what I'm doing as a coach and what I'm doing with this podcast. And I also have a new website that's going to be unfolding. It'll be new and improved, and I'm excited to have that up and going. A couple tweaks before I'm ready to release it, but just stay tuned. It's coming hopefully by September of 2020. And that's the result of me working with my own coach to help me with my branding and how I communicate about what I do with people. So again, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this. I hope that you found this episode helpful, and I encourage you that if you need to talk to somebody, take me up on that 30-minute free strategy session, and I guarantee at the end of that session, you will have some direction on what you need to do next, whether that's working with me or whether that's connecting with somebody else that can help you better than I can. But I guarantee you, it won't be a waste of your time. All right, take care. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you on the next episode.